The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lincoln-L Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. Welcome to Talk Around Town. This is Margaret Friednauer, your host, your guide. Through today's talk about things that matter to us, I'm filling in for Deborah today, who's a little under the weather. But stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Morfitt. Today's talking topic is a struggle to describe the Alaska Marine Highway System. And our guests are Haneboro Assembly Member Steve Vick, Skagway Council Member, and Marine Transportation Advisory Board Member Mike Korsmo. And we'll be checking in with the Salvation Army. This is Talk Around Town. Thanks for joining us. Good morning. Hi, Tom.
Happy New Year, Margaret.
Happy New Year. I've seen you since then, but we haven't had a talk around town since then.
Yeah, it's our first one of the new year.
It is. Unfortunately, Deborah can't be with us. She's feeling pretty under the weather, but we're going to do our best to muddle through. And she had some... She came up with the topic this week. She came up with the guest, so we're just going to try to walk through what she had ready for us and see if we can inform the community a little bit.
Deborah is hard to replace, but we'll give it a shot.
Okay, Tom. I'm not used to reading on this side of the console with you, but I'll try too. So, of course, this is the time when we talk about what's news.
Sure.
And, well, there's a few things that's happened since our last talk around town, but let's see. I'm going to let you dictate what topic you want to discuss today.
Well, I usually open the show with just a general statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're right now in the doldrums kind of our winter. The snow outside is lousy. There's not enough of it, and it's slushy. The basketball teams and Hanes are not winning, and there's not a lot of money in town. There's typically a little dip in the town's energy before heli-skiing starts.
Okay.
Next month, we got heli-skiing. We've got the Dick Hatch Basketball Tournament. I think the Brown Bag Lecture Series starts in February.
Oh, yeah.
So things start to swing up. But
the Buckwheat Ski Classic, that's not until March.
Yeah, but the registration of that has started. So
yeah.
We're starting to see we're kind of getting into our winter groove here a little bit.
Okay.
The other downside thing is this dog shooting, which has kind of consumed the town.
Yes.
A friend of mine said, it's like the town has broken its soul.
Oh, my.
And it's like,
harsh.
You know, breaking your heart is one thing, but breaking your soul. Like,
oh, my word.
What could be more grievous than breaking your soul?
You know, this is interesting because I asked Chief Lowe yesterday. I was like, you know, I understand why this is such an important case, but kind of verbalize it. Like, help me verbalize why this is of such high importance.
Oh.
And he's like, you know, people think of their dogs as their family.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, and to have this faceless person out there who is shooting dogs, it adds to the creep factor, you know, the scariness factors.
No, I had a friend that came here years ago, and as he was leaving, there were two dogs sleeping on Main Street. It was a Sunday morning in the summertime.
Uh-huh.
And he'd already remarked on how dogs kind of own this town. It was before Hark came about, and we had a lot more stray dogs. So, yeah, Alaskans prize their dogs. They love their dogs.
Right.
You know, it was the old bumper sticker that said, my wife, sure, my dog, maybe, my gun, never.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
So okay, the dogs are right up there in the hierarchy.
I understand. Okay.
But anyway, yeah, the police have told us, I think this week they had over 100 people call in and say, I think I know, you know, I have a tip. And none of them have panned out yet, but it does kind of as a story is a great reflection of Alaskan what Alaskans hold dear.
Right.
Anyway, this week's big news, of course, was besides the ferry news, which I think is of greater regional interest.
Yes.
Here in town, Mark Ernest received a satisfactory evaluation.
The borough manager.
Our borough manager. A lot of concerns from the newspaper, from me, and I think you've expressed those about the process for that decision made in a committee meeting during which there was an executive session and after which there was no public statement or explanation. Second time this has happened here in the last 6 months or so, there was a appointment of assembly member where of a school board member last year. The school board went to an executive session, came out, made no other statement, and took a vote. And
right.
I think there's a host of issues there. One of them is does that in fact break at least the spirit of the Open Meetings Act?
Right.
Well, isn't that decision effectively being made behind closed doors? If there's no discussion, if there's a single vote when they come out, you know, that decision for all practical purposes has been made behind those closed doors. A lot of other issues involved. Committees, according to the state of Alaska, all executives must be first convened as a legal public meeting. This meeting sounds like there was never even a vote. It was a committee meeting.
A committee of the whole. And then
committee of the
right.
whole. So we're going to be looking at that this week.
Okay.
And
I did, I mean, to take a step over to the other side of the console for a moment, I did, you know, and it is about process. I'm not sure that anybody is pinpointing individuals or think that there's ill motive except for the fact that there's a process and, you know, what's wrong with following the process, I guess, or analyzing that process and seeing, like, I mean, the executive session is not meant to be a secret meeting. It's just meant to take place outside of public for very specific purposes and reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think that a evaluation of a borough manager falls into that for some of it. And then I think there's some of it that can easily be discussed in public and to understand why the assembly feels the way they do.
Right. So. And only those topics, such as the subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation of a character of a person, can be considered in an executive session.
Right.
So a larger discussion of where are we going with this evaluation or where are we going with this appointment cannot be done. It's only those matters that are specific and so personal that they would damage a person's reputation. And so,
hopefully they didn't spend an hour talking about those kind of things and then come out and give them a satisfactory evaluation. My theory was, well, you must have said something good about the guy. You know, I mean, the manager
sure.
must have some. I mean, and we want to keep him, so that's great.
Yeah.
But,
and
you know.
And I think myself that one thing I wanted to mention here is the state law says it's up to these bodies. You and I tend to be the people that bring these issues up. And it's almost as though people expect the newspaper to watch out for that. The state law says it's the responsibility of the government itself to make sure it's adhering to these rules.
Right.
Another thing I don't think has been pointed out is if you were the subject of a person it's a secret meeting, and say you get appointed or whatever as a result of a secret meeting, I mean, this is my own personal belief. I don't think that reflects particularly well on you.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that some of these people who are being discussed in an executive session would at some point say, hey, open it up.
And
I'm not this bad.
That's their option. Under the state law, they get
yeah.
to have that
they,
option.
They get
right,
the,
right.
They get that.
Right.
There's a host of process. And the process is important because that's where the trust is. That's what ensures that people – that the rules are the same for everybody walking in the door.
Right.
So when the process changes for a certain topic, it could tend to erode the public's trust in the government as a whole. And trust is what our whole society is run on.
Right.
Once the trust is gone, your relationship with whoever you have a relationship with is gone. I mean,
mm-hmm.
trust is the glue, and it's got to be there. But anyway, I'll get off that soapbox.
Oh, okay. You have another soapbox? We have a few more minutes.
I'm just going through my proofs for my paper here.
Hey, so well, I know I had one, and I think Karen wrote this story, but maybe you have. I'd been watching it a little bit too. Kind of took a winter break from Connolly Lake Hydro Project.
Yeah.
But what is there? There is some things on the horizon. I know mm-hmm. they got some permitting for some studies, and but Karen wrote a longer article about that.
Yeah, it's a, well, one of the big hurdles there is building the plant building the hydro plant in the Eagle Preserve, which is not allowed in the outright language of the preserve. Some people in the state are saying, well, that language was developed at a time when Alaska was, you know, rolling in cheap oil or at least money, so we didn't have to worry about, you know, running our diesel plants. That's the biggest hurdle, ostensibly. But, to a certain extent, I think there was just a decision from FERC, I think, where the state was challenging a FERC decision on Susitna.
That's a big one going up in Susitna.
You know, and these are all part and parcel. You know, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission mm-hmm. has the big hammer, and so it's a big issue that plays out on a lot of different stages. There's, you know, you have to get past the state fish people, you have to get past FERC, and so it's a big project for the power company to be involved in.
And I think that having the Eagle Preserve there adds another layer too.
If you remember, the Juneau Road mm-hmm. was going to go to Skagway,
mm-hmm.
and that was the whole plan, because you could go from one town to the other, and that's, you know, what the plan was a couple of years ago. And there was a hitch, I believe it was a National Park Service hitch that said, you absolutely cannot bring that road through here.
Right.
And I mean, who knew that there was, you know, such a thing? So, and the state didn't contest it. The state just walked away from that. And,
right.
and so there are times when there are laws in place that, you know, can just put a red X over what you're wanting to do. It's kind of fascinating.
Well, I guess it'll come up more in the coming weeks and this year too as they do more tests. So,
yeah.
Well, thanks, Tom. I appreciate you coming by and helping me out today with Deborah Gaughan.
Yeah, so, well, it'll be good to have you back on my team.
Tom, we don't talk about that. All right. Thanks a lot, Tom. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And we're back with Talk Around Town. I'm Margaret Friednauer, filling in for Deborah Schnabel today. Just a quick note, I wanted to mention that Talk Around Town is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions today, offering comprehensive refuse service for the community of Haines with curbside pickup to self-haul, composting to recycling, C&D disposal to septic, and porta-potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road, open 10 to 3, Monday through Saturday. And now we have Lieutenant Dave Kyle from the Salvation Army in Haines. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Thank you.
Well, I know you talked with Deborah about this. We kind of wanted to have you on because the Salvation Army has maintained a viable community program in Haines for decades, and it's building on Union Street that we're all kind of familiar with. Serves both visitors and residents as a place of worship, a source of less expensive clothes and household items, food, and shelter when needed. So the Salvation Army administers several programs in the community. Let's start with the most obvious for some of I don't think most of us, but most of us do know the Salvation Army thrift store.
Yes.
And from what I understand, you're one of the new – are you new to the Salvation Army in Haines?
I'm new to the Salvation Army in Haines. We got here in June 27th of last year.
Oh, okay. So a few months now.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know that there have been quite a few changes at the thrift store. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that came about and kind of how you view the thrift store in the Salvation Army's role in the community?
Well, the thrift store is the one and only role of the thrift store is to provide money to continue operations in the community.
Okay.
The officers such as myself and those that have gone before me are sent to the community. We're not sent to that building, not sent to that store. We're sent to this community. And that store is started to provide monies to not provide social services, but to provide a viable presence. We pay our electricity and heating oil and water and all that out of there. And then if there's some left over, that rolls over into social services. Changes that have been noticed is primarily because of my personal way of doing things. I'm not a garage sale type person.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with garage sales. I love going to garage sales.
Right.
But you can't budget on a garage sale.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay.
Looking over the books before me, I was seeing sales, you know, $40 one week, and the next week $800. And we were hitting somewhere between $16,000 and $20,000 was a good figure that I would expect to see. Well, if you do the math and running it 6 days a week, which we are, $107 a day average will give us a $35,000 a year,
okay,
which is almost double what we did last year.
Okay.
So I'm taking more of a retail look at it and trying to increase customer interest because every 4 weeks, whatever just went on the floor today, in 30 days, it will be headed to Anchorage to try to sell there. And if it doesn't sell there, then we'll go into what we call the rag out and sent for rags or for material uses someplace else. So in 1 week, our clothing goes down 25%. Two, it's 50. Three, it's 75%. And then it's headed out the door. That has really increased customer interest because they know it's not going to sit there forever.
Right, right.
You the shelves are I've had people mention to me that there's nothing on the shelves. Well, there is. It's just that you can see it now. You're not fighting through a compressed mass of clothing to get to it.
Gotcha.
Just to try to keep that steady sales and have a consistent amount of dollar value so that we can continue operations here. Because we are a mission field corps. We receive money from the 48 states to operate here. And I could technically lose the store, just say, I'm not going to do this anymore, and we're going to mm-hmm. operate on mission funds. But we try not to do that.
Okay, I understand. Yeah. And what can people do to help with that? I mean, obviously the customers bring in the money, but then the donators, people that donate things, you know, are there things that could help you in the store to as far as what people donate or when people donate and things like that?
That is an excellent question. It's one that every thrift store struggles with. In Haines, I can and will take anything.
Okay.
I'll take furniture. I'll take TVs. It doesn't make a difference because I take the standpoint that if there is something that won't sell here, I'll find an avenue for it. If there's no avenue for it, that's just the cost of business. As an example, TVs.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sell a TV if I tape a $20 bill to it.
Oh, really?
And so they have to go to the dump. And I encourage people that have come to me and asked prior to dropping them off, I say, I can't sell that. There's nothing I can do with that other than to throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
That's the cost of business. If something comes to me broken, destroyed, ruined, it has to go to the dump. That being said, we see very little of that.
Oh, good. Okay.
Haines is excellent on giving us good quality donations that don't – it makes the sorting process very easy.
Oh, good.
I can just about guarantee from the first piece of clothing out of a bag the condition of the entire bag. Oftentimes, that's not the case. Sometimes, I know in Pendleton, when I was there, the top of the bag would be one nice shirt, and then everything below that was urine stained or molded or nasty, and you had to throw the whole bag out.
Oh, geez, yeah.
So Hanes is good in that respect, but the way the community can help us with that is to smaller amounts spread out over time.
Okay.
Especially going into the season where people are going to be coming to us more often, we can sell what you have. We can get it out on the floor. But if you four truckloads, I'm done for that. That's 3 weeks that I can't take donations. So little bits of, you know, spread your truckload over 2 or 3 weeks, bring a bag in a day, and that's something that I can process.
Understood. So. Oh, that's a good advice. Okay, thank you for that. Well, but on the thrift store, obviously, I think over this season, the Chukat Valley News mentioned you raised several thousand dollars for distribution in the community. And let's talk about some of those other resources. You do a lot more than just the thrift store. So what do you do with those funds, and what other services are you there for?
This year we primarily did on-the-ground bell ringing. I ended up being at IGA most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The volunteer base, sickness and injured limbs and all that, we didn't have the volunteer base that we could have had. Not bad, just that's the way it worked out this
year.
Sure. And then we also had the online Red Kettle, which people could donate online. Between the two, we ended up with about the same as what we did last year, which was roughly $4,000.
Okay.
Now, that $4,000 is apportioned out over the 12 months of the year, the fiscal year, not the calendar year. And then that's our social services budget. Now, if you're watching my books and some of my clients, they've gone, well, wait a minute, I just spent most of your 12 months budget this month, because we've sent out day before yesterday. So almost $3,500 in rental assistance, emergency lodging and such as that. So that's where the thrift store comes in, as we make up that downfall.
Okay. Okay.
Now we also have white mail, which a lot of our residents get mail solicitation from us. And that money, you'll see in the letter that we have various times Christmas appeals and Thanksgiving appeals and summer camp appeals, and that money is routed to that. I don't have the exact figures right now, but as far as I can tell, we're doing what we need to do with the money that we've been given.
Okay, okay.
So it just depends on what we're doing. Our primary outreach to the community at this time, at this moment in time, is rental assistance. That's a $400 a person shot.
Wow.
Just minimum.
Wow.
Most of the time it's more than that. And food. We have three food programs. We have TFAP, the Emergency Food Assistance Program. It's an agricultural program run by the USDA. We're the local warehouse for it and the distribution point. We have the outdated foods program from our local grocery stores. That is actually better than the TFAP program. That's all run by volunteers. All I do is make sure they got tables and they do that out.
Okay.
The last couple months, that's been looking at the boxes, probably 40 pounds of food, everything from frozen to cans of olives.
Oh, wow.
Going out to the community, those that come in and go through the easy application process, basically give us your name and tell us you have a need and you can go through the line.
Okay.
And then we also have the emergency food box program. That is, each box is set for 1 to 4 people, and it has a X amount of food in it. It's not going to get you fat, but it'll keep you alive. And that is something that can be drawn as needed through the month. If you need food, come see me. We'll make sure you got some food.
Okay, great. Well, I do know Salvation Army really is kind of the emergency safety net for the Hanes community. We're a small community, but there still are those in need in the community, and you guys really are kind of the front line for them. So,
well, we don't draw the line at anything.
Okay.
If you come to me with a need and you can demonstrate that it impacts your ability to have food in your stomach, water in your mouth, and a roof over your head, I will do what I can to impact it. And before you let me go, I got to tell you,
yes,
our people here in town are the greatest donors I've ever seen. I have never met a community that, A, knew we were a church, be supported us as a church and a community service. Usually you hear that, well, why are you helping these people? They should get a job or they should do this. Haynes doesn't care. If somebody's in need, the people in Haynes take care of it. I love that aspect of Haynes, is that they really have a love for their fellow person.
It's wonderful. Well, I was going to ask you that too, because anybody who does want to donate or help or volunteer with those things, they just need to come to you also and check that out, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Come see me. Cash is always welcome.
Okay.
Because we will do the most good, as we have a tagline, but we'll also make sure that I'll start a program. If I've got a volunteer that wants to do something, I'll start a program. I got one gal that's doing that now. So.
Oh, great. Well, thanks, Dave. It was Lieutenant Dave Kyle with the Salvation Army in Haynes. I really appreciate you stopping by and letting us know about you.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, take care. And we're back with Talk Around Town. I'm Margaret Friednauer in for Deborah today, who's feeling a little under the weather. Just a little background here. On December 4th, the communities of Haynes and Skagway were jolted by the news that Governor Sean Parnell pulled the plug on the Alaska-class ferry, a new vessel that would serve the Lynn Canal between Juneau and Skagway and also serve as fill-in vessel for other routes in need. Earlier this week, the new DOT Commissioner Pat Kemp apologized for not including the public in the analysis of the process and that decision. A lot has happened in between, and today we are discussing aspects of the abrupt change in plans and what it means for Haynes and Skagway. Our guests are Haynes Assembly Member Steve Vick today. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, glad to be here.
And we have Skagway Assembly Member Mike Korsmo joining us by phone. I'm going to see if he's with us. Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
I can't hear you guys.
Okay. Well, we're having a little trouble with the phone, so we might just talk to Steve here for a moment, but...
I can hear you better now.
You can. Okay. I'm going to try it here, Mike, and we're going to stay with you for a few minutes, and then maybe we'll let you go early so that you're not struggling to hear us too much, okay?
Okay.
But as a member, you know, you're also a member of the state's Marine Transportation Advisory Board, a citizen group chaired by Haynes resident Robert Venables, and your board's task is to advise the administration on matters of the Alaska Marine Highway. So I'm interested, Mike, can you tell us your reaction to the news relative to the time you have spent advising DOT in the development of the class ferry about all these developments recently?
We were caught off guard as far as the changes in the direction of the Alaska class ferry. So we heard about it just like everybody else on the news, or people, you know, texting or calling us. So I think the reaction of the board initially was just sort of shock and really surprised that we weren't brought into the process when the changes were being discussed, with the administration. We weren't brought into the process of the changes that were proposed. So it was a kind of a shock, I think, to everybody on the board.
Okay. And, Mike, can you tell me, for Skagway specifically, the proposal is these two shuttle ferries. One would go Haynes-Juneau. The other would go Skagway-Haynes. And so that would mean anyone traveling between Skagway and Juneau needs to change boats in Haynes. And I'm trying to figure out, I mean, in Haynes, that doesn't affect residents here much, but you've got to be hearing some some feedback on that proposal from people in Skagway.
Yeah, we haven't, you know, we have a ferry advisory committee that's just met maybe, I think, once or maybe twice since the proposed changes. We've sent our comments and of our concerns to the governor and to MTAB and to everybody else. But I think there will be quite a bit of discussion about how that will work and whether, you know, people in Skagway would embrace that, getting off the ferry and getting back on a ferry and going to Juneau. I don't think, you know, at this point in time, I wouldn't say I've heard any positive comments about that. And so we're kind of waiting to see what the exact plan is. It's still unclear what their exact plan is, or whether they can actually build two vessels to accommodate what one vessel might have done, and the costs associated with that as far as the terminal modifications and everything else. So we're kind of waiting to hear what the, you know, final plan is. It was just sort of thrown out there, and I don't think all the costs and all the logistics have been feathered out yet. So we're kind of waiting to hear. Personally, you know, I have a little bit of trouble with it as far as the transfer goes, unless the transfer is smooth. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of people I don't think will want to get, you know, going to want to walk off or kick their car off and get back on another ferry, unless it's a real smooth transition and doesn't affect us as far as the timing goes and travel time and all that stuff. But
right.
It doesn't, you know.
Right.
I'm not sure everybody's going to be really happy with that.
I can understand that. Hey, can I ask you one more question before I let you go, Mike, because of our connection here? You have a little experience in this, so I kind of wanted to bring this up with you. Like you mentioned, there's still a lot of talk out there about what these designs are going to look like. There's this rumor about open deck designs and, you know, back and forth. But I know you have some experience. Can you kind of explain a little bit about how do Coast Guard and perhaps even union rules dictate how a ship has to be designed for this kind of work or this role?
Well, I mean, the Alaska class ferry, original Alaska class ferry was being designed to handle the conditions of Lynn Canal, also some other areas of the state that have extreme weather conditions. It was designed as a day boat, but it was designed to handle the waters of the area that we live in. And as you know, or anybody's been paying attention this last month or two, there's been quite a few cancellations with the Connie size of vessel. And for those of you that travel the ferry system, as myself a lot, wintertime in Northern Lynn Canal can be particularly brutal and times. And so there's a big concern on my part, probably quite a few other people's parts, about the concept of a bow ramp and potentially partial open deck. The more I'm hearing about what they're trying to design, it's going to be some sort of partial open deck towards the stern. There's in the bow ramp makes people fairly nervous. There has been quite a few ferries built with bow ramps in different areas of the world, but there has been some failures also. So yeah, I have extreme amount of concern about the proposed design and the open deck situation. There was some explanation of that yesterday, but we were still waiting to hear what the final design is and stuff. And they're talking, you know, they're talking 300 foot now. So, and can you build, you know, two vessels, 300 foot vessels, and still come in under the $120 million that was going to cost to build one? You know, the cost has somewhat escalated, but I'm not sure what all the other factors were of that cost escalation on the Alaska class. But it's just, it'll be interesting to see if any design can that comes forward is going to be adequate and satisfy people in their concerns about the route. I have a lot of reservations about it, and I think a lot of people do.
Okay. Mike, one more question. Can Skagway Terminal right now accommodate a bow loading?
There's no bow loading capability. Potentially, they can potentially use the ramp for the fairweather in Juneau. The proposal, as has been discussed, has been to put a bow loading facility in Haines, and Skagway will still be a stern side loading. So I guess they'd back in there, so they'd have a side door on this new potential design, I guess. But the modifications potentially. What they're saying is modifications would have to take place in Haines, and they even had a cost estimate of what that potentially would cost. So that would be modifications to the ferry terminal, which is already going under modifications to right now in the process of going to modifications in Haines to accommodate, you know, existing service in the Alaska class. But there would have to be an additional modification in Haines. I believe, you know, estimates are somewhere between $15 to $20 million that cost. So they say that they can do it with just the bow ramp modifications in Haines. But yet at the same time, the questions that has to be asked as far as how they're going to accommodate in Juneau, and if they're doing multiple shuttles between Haines and Juneau, are they going to be able to, you know, fit all the boats in there that come in and out of there all the time? That was a question that was asked yesterday. So there's a lot of questions out there. It's really, you know, there's a lot of questions to be answered on this change in direction.
Okay, Mike. Hey, I really appreciate you spending some time with us this morning and helping us understand this a little bit more from someone on the MTAB board. I know you're in Juneau right now, just coming off that meeting. So I'm going to let you go. But really, thanks a lot for your help and your input today. Okay.
Okay, you bet. Sounds good. Thank you.
Take care. And we still have Steve Vick with us here in the studio. Steve, a member of the Haynesboro Assembly. Steve, last week I was there with you following this announcement by the governor. The Joint House Transportation Committee down in Juneau held a meeting to start talking about this. We had it live webcasted here at the library. I know the mayor was there and you were there and a few other people. Can you want to start with your reaction and what you kind of heard at that meeting that kind of prompted your interest and got your attention?
Well, I mean, a lot of things got my interest prior to that meeting.
That's a good point.
The person that was there was Commissioner Kemp, who's been newly appointed there to that position, and he was pretty much the one talking with the legislator, the Transportation Committee. And there were a lot of questions. I was pretty happy with the quality of the questions that were being asked. I think the thing that caught everyone, what I could tell within our room and with the legislators that were asking the questions, was that they were really short on answers. They didn't have many specifics about the cost or the design or how they would accommodate what was just brought up, how you're going to retrofit terminals and the cost of that. But at the same time, they guaranteed us, you're going to like it. And so, you know, it was frustrating to hear lack of answers, but the promise that, but don't worry, you're going to like it. I think that caught a lot of people as off guard.
Right. And this idea that I know that he said he has the preliminary design right now, the draft. And I know that there's some leeway between when an administrator gets a draft and they release it. But to understand that there's some details in there that could answer some questions, it seemed to cause some frustration among some of the people there too. Yeah, so, I don't know. What else did you find at that meeting? I know they mentioned that they admitted they part of the reason the project got out of control was because of public process, but then the decision to revert back to it didn't have public process. So that was kind of
actually I should give my hat off to Mike and to Robert Venables, who serve on MTAB. Which is a big part of the public process, and they were used quite a bit in designing the Alaska class. I think what ended up happening and what caught everyone by surprise was not only did they just remove the funding for the ferry, but they pretty much undermined the public process that was involved in creating the Alaska class ferry. And I think the legislators were concerned that they actually superseded legislative process, because there is a way to go about adjusting the budget and coming up with new designs. And one of the legislators had brought up that their lawyers, the legislative lawyers, had found reasons that they believed were concerned that they did not legally go through the process. And, of course, Commissioner Kemp had talked with his lawyers,
right.
And his lawyers had the opposite opinion. So there is controversy surrounding how it happened, why it happened, and the undermining of public process in
this. Okay. Well, you've been here for several years, and like you said, you've been following this even before all this came up recently. I'm pretty new to the community. Mm-hmm. So take me back to how you were following it before. Do you remember these public meetings about the Alaska Class Ferry project and what Commissioner Kemp said, you know, caused this project to get out of control was the public mm-hmm. asking for more amenities and bigger boats and staterooms and things like that. Is that how you remember it?
The original concept was to have a type of shuttle ferry.
Okay.
And so they had several ways of going about doing the design, and part of it was public process. And I remember people from MTAB, or at least from the design engineering, coming to Haines, giving a presentation, taking our feedback, and really getting the opinion of the public, what things they would want in that. And so we were involved they came and gave a presentation to the assembly, and it was nice to be included and nice to get the update on the process. The thing that they said the spending got out of control a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but as far as we know from both the shipyard that was going to create the boat and the engineering firm that was designing a boat, there was never given an estimate of the cost.
So I see what you're saying.
There was concern that I think that was actually brought up, where are these estimates coming from, and there was no answers to that. But yeah, so it went through the public process, and they pretty much at one point they said, this is going to cost too much. We're going back to square one, and we're going to go back to the shuttle ferry. And, you know, shuttle ferry is a keyword that people hear, and it just sends all sorts of images into their head, and what does that mean, and how is it created? And the thing that they didn't eliminate through the whole legislative process when we heard that was the idea of an open-deck ferry.
Right.
And Mike just talked about that, and there is concern about that, because we don't have the ability in Lynn Canal to measure waves, how high in the force of them. We just don't have the systems here to do that. So there's no scientific way to engineer a boat to handle what the Lynn Canal can have. So that's when local knowledge becomes very important. And we have many ferry captains who've gone up and down who can contribute to this process.
Oh, that's a good point.
And you know, someone had brought up the other day that, well, if they really think that an open deck would work, they should bring the Lituya up here and try that next winter and see how that works.
Oh,
the
that's
Lituya
a good
idea. Is an open,
right.
deck shuttle ferry.
Okay.
I think we've all seen, those who have Facebook, the photos. I think Ron Horner, somebody took of one of the boats coming in with about a foot of ice caked on it from the ferry ride. So imagine your car.
Imagine your car. And I mean, I think about, I mean, this is kind of a silly thought. I know this sounds random, but I have brought a dog to Juneau for, and you know, well, you're director of Hark too, but you know, to, my dog was always comfortable in the car when I take him to the ferry, even in the middle of winter, to Juneau for vet care or whatever he needs. And I can't imagine putting my dog in the car on an open deck. I know that sounds, that's one of those random thoughts I had when I was thinking about this, but it was one of them. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have, they made legitimate points about cost savings and the idea of having a crew that is a day crew, not an overnight crew. There's different union things you have to meet with a crew that stays and lives aboard. There's more expense of that. There's more amenities needed, you know, and that's understandable. But we don't have the numbers to see if this is actually going to save money, because now you're creating two boats,
right,
with two staffs, with two retrofitted, or at least Hanes and possibly Skagway for sure, retrofitted to accommodate a roll-on, roll-off system.
Right.
We're just not sure those numbers add up as a cost savings.
The commissioner also threw out the numbers of 15 to 20 permanent jobs in Hanes, because one of those shuttles would be home ported in Hanes. And that sounds great. I mean, does that I guess I don't see the proof in the pudding yet that would stack up to that. Mm-hmm. He suggests that. I mean, it sounds like a good idea. Would that be something that might get more people on board with this idea of home porting one of these shuttles in Hanes if the design was something they felt comfortable with? Or
I think creating jobs in Hanes is not a bad thing.
Okay.
So, you know, there's merit to that. But in the end, we have to look at what services are provided, the safety of the passengers, and the overall cost of the project.
Okay. Am I going out on a limb here? I haven't heard anybody bring it up, but if you look at the reports and you look at some of the old DOT documents, the shuttle ferry is somewhat occasionally linked to this idea of the Juneau Road, so that the shuttle ferries would eventually go to Hanes and Captain or Slate if they needed to, and because of avalanches that they anticipate on any proposed road during the winter. So, I mean, is that a discussion that you think is going to come up eventually, this idea of these shuttles? The DOT commissioner, who's a big supporter of the Juneau Road project, is really thinking of these as a future shuttle ferries to those terminals instead of all the way to Ock Bay.
I think that's a concern. I think that is a conversation that needs to be happening. I think it would sidetrack the conversation of service with the ferry in general, but I think that is a part that needs to be talked about. You have to look at the STIP, which is the state transportation. It's the DOT's plan on the money that they're going to be spending on transportation. Well, STIP 3, which was the stage it was in, included money for the Alaska-class ferry, the $120-some-odd million. Well, STIP 4 eliminated that money but added – $50 to $100 million for the Juneau Road.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's in the budget like that. So there, I think that conversation has merit, and it is something that's a concern for people, and whether that's going to be a system that works for us. And again, the road has its own issues.
Right.
We have to look at that, I think, separately. You have to understand also that the Hanes Borough Assembly in 2004, 2007, 2011, and last year, 2012, passed a resolution in support of a better ferry service.
Oh, okay. Good to point out. Yeah. And I mean, I can see how the two conversations are also separate, because obviously shuttles can be built before a road is built. So those shuttles have to service us all the way to Juneau before they would service us anywhere on a road system. So I was just trying to make the connection, because sometimes it comes up. But well, what else do you think is important for residents to keep an eye on in this? I mean, today there is another Joint House Transportation Committee meeting where they're taking public comment on this, and I know Mayor Scott is going to be there to give her comment, at least from Hanes. She's going to teleconference in with comment. Mm-hmm. Is it just a matter of waiting until this preliminary report comes out? Is it a matter of...
I think it's important now is to keep asking questions, because we need their answers on record. That's going to be important for us to be able to establish some type of, whether we're going to argue or defend it or be in support of it, we need those answers, and those answers aren't coming right now. So we need to continue to ask as many questions as possible and try to get answers on record so that when the process or the design comes up, we can go back to those answers and try to reflect on them and see if what they're saying and what they actually do matches up. And also those questions are just inevitably going to be the help the legislators make the decisions they need to make on whether they want to go forward with this project or a different idea. Yeah, I'm pretty concerned about the idea of the public process and whether it's going to be involved fully or not. I think that's important. And I think I would hope that the engineers who design, who they plan to design this, would go with some local knowledge from captains that actually go up and down the Lynn Canal to get an idea of what type of boats work here. I was happy to see that they are talking of about a 280-foot, 300-foot vessel. That, you know, that is a good thing. We certainly want anything smaller than that.
Right.
But, again, the designs are preliminary. I fully understand their argument that a roll-on, roll-off system would be more efficient, but there's huge concerns on whether a bow-loading boat would even be safe in these waters. And then, of course, that retrofitting that Mike brought up, that's $15 to $18 million per terminal that would be included in the cost. And that would be a question to ask. Is that retrofitting expense included in the estimate of the cost of the ferry?
And that's what came up at that meeting last
week.
Right. Yeah,
and they didn't have an answer for that either.
Right. Okay. As far as the Marine Advisory Transportation Board, Mike Korsmo is on that and Robert Venables. Do you see that? I mean, what have you seen them accomplish over the couple years, over the last few years with the Alaska Class Ferry Project? I mean, they expressed their surprise at just not knowing, reverting back, but I think it was it's interesting to look how has that board maybe been there for the people and the public as being involved in this process over the last few years that it's important to keep up. How have you seen that board really take an active role in that? That maybe that's the reason why people are worried about how this decision came about.
Well, the board was part of the public process, and I think the board was the people's voice being heard by the government and the representatives and the commissioners that were trying and the engineering firm that were designing this. They had a very important role. I think it gave the project a lot of credibility and a lot of support from the communities that what their concerns were and their needs were going to be listened to and answered. And with the complete just the cutoff of not only the design but MTAB, I think leaves people wondering if the government's listening anymore or if they have the concerns of the constituents and the residents in Southeast at the best interest of those constituents at mind when they're doing this. There's all sorts of conspiracy theories going on. Why are they doing this? Who's behind
right,
it? You
right.
know? But I think it's really important to just stay on the topic and, again, ask those questions and try to get those answers and get them on record. And if the public feels like they're being shut out in some way. I'm not sure what MTAB's role is anymore.
Right.
But that would be certainly a route to go. And it, like you said today, there's a hearing this afternoon.
Yes, just going to mention that.
Three?
It's at 1 o'clock, and the library is webcasting it again for us, for anybody in Haines who wants to go. Are you going to go to that, Steve?
I plan on being there,
okay.
Yes.
And I know Mayor Scott will be there giving her public comment on the issue. I know she's been working on that a lot recently about formulating her comments for the public testimony today. Anything else you wanted to add, Steve? I think we've covered it. It's just an ongoing issue right at this point, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think people just stay informed and stay aware, and feel free to write your legislators or talk to assembly members if you have concerns. I think it's that communication and keeping that open is going to be important during this process. And I think the mayor is really on top of it right now, and she's very informed. And I think through that and through the assembly, we'll be able to keep Haines involved and informed on the latest updates. And I'm really happy with the live feeds that are going at the library that allows anyone who wants to participate or be involved through the legislative process even, that we can go and participate and observe it.
Yeah, those are great. They're on a very nice big screen. I know I was thinking of just watching it on my computer last week, but it was nice to go and kind of watch it with other people on a nice big screen. So thanks, Steve Vick, Haynesboro Assembly Member, talking to us today a little bit about the Alaska Class Ferry and some of the recent happenings with that. Have a great day.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, take care. And we're back with Talk Around Town. I'm Margaret Friednauer, here with, well, I'm here in place of Deborah Schnabel today, who's feeling a little under the weather. But we hadn't had a Talk Around Town for a few weeks, so we wanted to keep the ball rolling. End of the show, we have a little thing called My Name Is. and today we have My Name Is.
Amelia Nash.
I know. Low-hanging fruit, people.
Sorry, it's so boring, everyone.
Hey, it's always good to get to know your local radio station staff because we're here for you all the time. And one thing I want to mention is what Amelia does. And Amelia, let me see. First of all, you have an owl collection. Let's get that out of the way. You're
yes,
a newlywed.
I am.
And what do you do at the station?
I am the program director at KHNS FM.
What does that mean? You just get to pick what great shows we get to listen to all the time, and that's all, you know, it's all fun and bubbles. And
yeah, that would have to be, I think, the very most fun part of my job is auditioning new shows. Fun and bubbles indeed, Margaret. Thank you. I also get to coordinate the volunteer schedule. I get to do programming behind the scenes, making sure that all of the pieces of our daily playlist are automated correctly. So learning computers was computers as a huge concept was a big first part of my job.
And we have a lot of great new volunteers recently, don't we? We have a few. We have a handful that have kept us going.
I would love to take this moment to introduce some of the new names on our volunteer board. If you guys haven't been tuning in the evenings in a while, it might be worth noting that Ashley Hilsinger has taken over Friday evenings from 8 to 10. And the Ashley Show is a wild ride. He is a great DJ. He's always picking very eclectic tunes and weaving them together as he sees fit. It's a great show. I'm enjoying it. Beth Fenhouse, familiar to a lot of people who drink beer in town.
Oh, yes, that's right.
She is doing blues soul funk, alternating with Alan de Premenil. So we've got some really good blues music being played now and some funky tunes as well. I know that Alan actually played Queen Latifah during Blue Soul Funk a couple weeks back, and it made me very happy.
I love Queen Latifah.
Some familiar names have come back to our evening lineup. Burl Sheldon has been doing a great With Strings Attached, alternating on Wednesday evenings with Jerry Clark. And Tom Ely has been holding down the jazz show on Monday nights. So that's been really cool to have all those guys back on air.
Well, and I know someone came back after about a 10 or 15-year hiatus. Is that right?
Yeah, a very nice someone, I might add. You might know him, Margaret. His name is John Hagen.
The voice sounds familiar.
Yeah, John's been doing flashbacks and fresh tracks for us at least a day a week, and he's very flexible about when that happens. This week he'll be doing it today.
Oh, that's great.
From 3 to 5.
But all our great volunteers. I mean, we got Tim Shields, Keith, Joni this morning, Sherry tomorrow, Ashley, Bob Plucker, Adam Richard, Margaret Sieben. It's a collective My Name Is today. And if you want to be a DJ, Amelia, is that even possible?
Absolutely. It is more than possible. It is probable. All you have to do is call me. And I can make that happen. We're always looking to expand our volunteer database, always looking to get fresh voices on the air. I always encourage new volunteers to take ownership of their programs and really just challenge themselves to do as much work on themselves during the show as they can. Like, how do you want your program to be? What do you want out of this? And making sure that they are also, you know, taking into account what they think the community wants as well. But it can be really exciting for people to see the music that we have and to spin shows out of it. You know, it takes a lot of creativity. And so we have some brilliant people here, and I know that there are even more brilliant people out there just waiting to share their musical tastes with everybody else. So give me a call, 766-2020-983-2853. My extension is 9. And it's a lot of fun. It's not a huge time commitment either. If you think about volunteer opportunities in town, the basic training that we go through, it's an hour to an hour and a half is the first session, which you sit at the board with me and I show you how all the little buttons work and talk about FCC regulations and things like that. And then after that, you sit in on shows until you're comfortable with the concept of going out on your own.
It's a lot of fun, people. Get your name on the radio for our collective My Name Is today. Thank you, Amelia. I appreciate your help very much. So, and now we're kind of wrapping up our Talk Around Town today, our special edition where we were trying to fill in for Deborah Schnabel. Hopefully we did her justice. I'm just going to go over a few of the things on the community calendar today. Let me see here. We have a lot going on. In Haines, the Recycling Center is open 9 a.m. to noon. The Haynesboro Public Library is open from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Movies with great soundtracks. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Is showing at 7 p.m. at the Haines Library. That's a fun one. Women's Christian Fellowship meeting today at 11 a.m. in the Port Chilcoot Bible Church. USDA food commodities will be distributed at the Salvation Army from 11 to 12 today. And strong women meet at noon in the Chilkat Center. Still have time to get down here for that. Senior caravan transportation available until 2 p.m. Call 766-2383 for reservations. Watching Wildlife presentation by Dr. Tal Levi, 2:30 today at the Klukwan Hospitality House. Sheldon Museum is open from 1 to 4. American Legion Burger Night, 5 p.m. at the Legion Hall. Yoga, 5:15 in the Chilkat Center Dance Studio. And Tlingit Rattle Carving Class, 6 p.m. at the Haynes School this evening. Pool schedule, everyone welcome swim 11 to 1:30 today, and family and lap swim 5:30 to 7 p.m. In Skagway, senior lunch at the Presbyterian Church from noon to 1 p.m. Adult care center is open from 1 to 5 in the Dippers Building. Marine Highway ad hoc committee meeting. That was our talking topic today, people. Get down to the Marine Highway ad hoc committee meeting in Skagway today, 3 p.m. in assembly chambers. The Skagway Public Library opened temporarily at the Skagway School, 3:30 to 8 this afternoon. Story time at 10:30 a.m. Well, that's probably already over. Women's AA meeting, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. at 11th and Broadway. At the Rec Center, cardio weight room, rock wall, and showers are open until 9 p.m. Senior chair weight-based training at 10:30. Family open gym from 3 until 5. Dance party workout, 5:30. Spinning at 5:45. And basketball for adults, 7 to 9 tonight at the Skagway Rec Center. Tomorrow in Haynes, early bird swim at 6 a.m. Let's see. Let's go over the weather real quick, just so you know. The Klondike Highway, snow-covered driving conditions on the Klondike Highway with areas of blowing and drifting snow, and partly snow and ice covered during driving conditions on the Alaska Highway, and partly snow and black ice covered driving conditions on the Haynes Highway. Today's ferry is a Taku, arriving in Haynes at 12:15, departing Haynes at 4:15, bound for Juneau. Friday's ferry is the Leconte. And just a quick look at the weather today. A tight inland Klondike Highway, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, snow level 400 feet, temperature steady around 40, ranging to around 31 near White Pass. Tonight, mostly cloudy, chance of snow, lows around 30. Let's see, in the Haynesboro and Lynn Canal today, rain likely, snow level 500 feet near the border, snow accumulation to 1 inch. I don't know, it's looking kind of nice out there. Temperature steady around 38, ranging to 31 near the border. Southeast wind 10 to 12 miles per hour, decreasing to 10. I did hear they had about 4 inches out at the border up the Haynes Highway this morning. Thanks to Chuck for that information. Tonight, cloudy, chance of snow, lows around 23, ranging to around 14. You know what? My name is Margaret Friednauer. I just want to mention that Talk Around Town today is supported in part by Community Waste Solutions, offering comprehensive refuse service for the community of Haynes, with curbside pickup to self-haul, composting to recycle, C&D disposal to septic, and porta-potty services. Community Waste Solutions at the end of FAA Road, open 10 to 3, Monday to Saturday. Thanks for joining us today for Talk Around Town. Our next show is, let's see, February 7th. Hopefully Deborah will be back for that. Thanks to our guests today, Tom Morfitt, Lieutenant Dave Kyle with the Salvation Army, Steve Vick, Mike Korsmo for calling in. I'm Margaret Friednauer. This station is KHNS 102.3 Haynes, translating at K201BK in Skagway. Thanks for joining us.